for the kids. 10 years ago, I Kissed a Girl came out, Rich. I don't know if you knew that. I don't know if you follow Katy Perry's career as closely as some people do.
10 years ago?
10 years ago.
Everybody thought that that was like a novelty hit, that she'd be like a one-hit wonder.
Now she's a superstar.
Like Four Non-Blondes or something like that, you know.
Wow.
Juliana Hatfield, all talented, but you know, they didn't have a ton of singles,
right? No.
And it was just the beginning for Katy.
It's all that cherry lip gloss. It propelled her.
Chapstick.
Oh, okay.
It made it more innocent. Wasn't even lip gloss.
Yeah. Okay. Violetta, the head of the Katy Perry Defense Fund.
Well, you realize if that song came out now, there would be protests about it, because it'd be like, you know, either you're bisexual or lesbian or trans, cis, positive or not. Don't just say you kissed a girl and you liked it. Did you really like it? Or are you dabbling?
We need your pronouns. Don't dabble. Yeah.
What are
no
you
dabbling.
Telling the kids?
Experiments are for science, because you remember every woman said, oh, well, I experimented in college.
Everybody. Yeah, there was a time when everybody talked about experimenting.
Well, women always say they experimented in college. If guys did it, then they were just gay. That was always the thing. I mean, come on, let's be honest. And if a guy said he experimented in college, that meant he tried two different strains of marijuana and mixed them in a bud that looked like, you know, Jethro Tull cover out.
Just doing some experiments, man.
Hey, man. I'm just hydroponic.
Sorry.
Experiment over here.
Yeah, exactly.
I was mixing a punch in my laundry hamper. There that was go. The big experiment. It's the summer. That means every weekend we are chock full of movies.
Yes, sir.
And we never miss out on a chance to have another superhero movie.
I'm glad to talk to you about this one, my friend. It's kind of under the radar, if you will, as far as these huge movies goes. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp. And
I will say I loved the original Ant-Man.
Yeah, Ant-Man. Paul Rudd, is a perfect casting for that, because Paul Rudd is one of the more likable actors out there. And he has that everyman quality. And that's the thing about Ant-Man. Ant-Man's kind of in the same vein as Spider-Man, where he has absolutely no superpowers until he puts on the suit. So he's still a regular guy. It's not like Thor or Superman, where they're always superheroes, whether they're wearing costumes or not, right? So in this one, the Wasp is played by Evangeline Lilly, who was the daughter of Michael Douglas' character in the first one. And they pick up the action now. And this is pretty cool, too, because if you're a big Avengers fan, you might remember that Captain America actually recruited Ant-Man for Avengers, for Civil War, for Captain America Civil War.
Yeah.
And he was very excited to meet all those guys, you know. But this picks up the story a few years later, because he's under house arrest because he violated the International Superhero Treaty, that whole thing. Who knew?
Yeah,
so he actually has an ankle monitor. And he could shrink down to the size of an ant, but he doesn't want to risk getting in trouble with the government again.
Sure, yeah.
So he's just at home. But then, you know, duty calls. And the main story here is Michael Douglas as the original kind of genius scientist who invented the Ant-Man, you know, technology where you could shrink down to that, you know, tiny level. He wants the help of Ant-Man. They are going to try to rescue Michael Douglas's wife, which would be the Wasp's mother.
Okay.
Who is Michelle Pfeiffer in this movie.
Oh, really?
Who is only, you know, we did not see her in the first movie, but it turns out that she's been deep in the vortex all these years, like all shrunken
realm.
Down, the other realm, if you will, the quantum realm.
Yes.
And they keep talking about the quantum realm, and at one point, it's great because Ant-Man just says, you guys just say quantum before everything, and then I'm supposed to, like, believe you, right? And what I liked about this one, Bri, is that it's a lot lighter and breezier than some of the other heavy superhero movies because it's Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's all about the fact that he can shrink way, 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 way down.
Yeah.
But then he can become really super giant as well. But they could do the same thing with inanimate objects. So they've got a Hot Wheel rally case. Remember the Hot Wheel rally case? It looked like a tire.
Yep. And it's got all the cars.
And they
could
just pick a car from the Hot Wheel and it'll become automatically it becomes the full size version of that lime green 32 Ford Vicky, you know? So it's a lot of fun. It's mostly fun, you know.
Well, the first one was a lot of fun too. It had the superhero and crime element, and there was the villain and all that, but there was still an underlying level of laughs. His friends were all goofy, and so you enjoy, it was a lot of fun
exactly. And the story's all about, you know, the obligatory arms dealer who wants to get a hold of the lab that Michael Douglas's character has, you know. So it's not about somebody coming from an intergalactic thing and trying to destroy the world. It's a crime caper like you used to see a lot in the comic books back in the day, you know, where it was just kind of a self-contained thing. There's references, of course, to the bigger universe, because he keeps bragging about the fact that, like, he goes, you know, Captain America told me to call him Cap. We're pretty close now. And it exists on the timeline. I don't want to give anything away, but you have to stick around. It does exist on the timeline of the current Avengers movie.
Okay.
Infinity Wars, which was the most recent one. And for people who saw what happened in that movie, let's just say that this movie kind of dubbed is happening in a parallel world. It's happening in San Francisco while their battles were going on in Wakanda and elsewhere, but it's happening at the same time. And it all ties together at one point. So I'm giving 3.5 stars to Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I love the casting. I mean, first of all, Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer, come on, you know, royalty. And then Evangeline Lilly, people might remember she was on Lost and a lot of other things. And she's really good with Paul Rudd. And I love Paul Rudd. I still want to see a Bobby Newport movie, for those of you that watch Parks and Rec. He was the Sweetums heir who ran against, who was literally the dumbest, nicest person ever.
I like him too, and I liked, as I said, I liked the original. Now, with that, this doesn't spoil anything, because I was very disappointed at the end of Deadpool 2 that there was not the post-credits scene, the add-on that all Marvel movies have. Does Ant-Man and the Wasp have that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to stick around. There's usually one right at the end of the credits when people are still in the theater, and then you got to wait through the list of the 47,000 people who worked on the movie.
You know what? But I think that's good.
I think it's
good for people to see that, because a lot of time we talk about piracy and all that. You don't realize how many people work on a movie.
It's incredible.
You sit through all the credits and go,
it's incredible.
God.
Especially, I think the Pixar films have the longest list.
It's insane.
The only people that really don't love it are the cleaning crews at the movies, because they have to wait for everyone to get out of there, because Americans, of course, are slobs.
Yes.
Unlike you saw the Japanese soccer fans who cleaned up the locker room, the stands, and everything.
Perfect.
I would hereby suggest that we start doing that, but I know I'm going to get no traction with that.
Well, if you stay around to the end to see those things, carry your garbage out.
Be nice.
Help out the kids who are working.
Listen, if you just gently put your soda down on the ground next to your chair, that's one thing. But I don't know but so much popcorn gets spilled.
People are very excited.
I think that might be it.
They're just throwing popcorn like they're having some sort of spasm.
I think that's what it is.
All right, now the next one, I've seen some of the trailers. This, Sorry to Bother You, looks kind of odd. Weird.
It is very strange.
It's like hard to comprehend.
A lot of people are going to compare it to Get Out, because it is a race based social satire set in kind of a realistic world where things really go crazy, and that's a legitimate concern. I don't think it's as good. I'm giving it 3 stars. I do like part of the premise here, though, is that this guy's working. He's a young black guy. He's trying to find a good job. He's really been struggling, so he gets a job at the telemarketing firm. But he's not really making a lot of sales. So he's at his desk there, and next to him is Danny Glover. There's a character played by Danny Glover, and he gives him a little bit of advice.
Hey, young blood, let me give you a tip. Use your white voice.
Man, I ain't got no white voice.
Oh, come on, you know what I mean. You have a white voice in there, you can use it. It's like being pulled over by the police.
Oh, no, I just use my regular voice when that happens. I just say, back the f*** up off the car, and don't nobody get
hurt. All right, man, I'm just trying to give you some game. You want to make some money here? Then read the script with a white voice.
People say I talk with a white voice anyway, so why ain't it helping me out?
Well, you don't talk white enough. I'm not talking about Will Smith's wife. I'm talking about the real deal. Like this young blood.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. This is Langston from Regalview. I didn't catch you at the wrong time, did I?
and as you can imagine, that's Steve Buscemi. All of a sudden, Danny Glover starts talking, but we hear Steve Buscemi's voice. And Lakeith Stanfield, who plays the lead there, when he talks, all of a sudden he sounds like Patton Oswalt.
Oh, that's
and
funny.
Like, when another black character talks in his white voice, he sounds like David Cross. So, like, the whitest kind of comic voices. And, of course, they start making more sales because, you know, and it does, it's a dark comedy in a lot of ways, and it's a sharp-edged satire. But it does make a point where, let's face it, when you get a telephone call, you immediately identify the person and you think that's a man or a woman, but you also somewhere think that sounds like a white person, that sounds like a black person, that sounds like a person of Hispanic heritage. You just do.
Yeah,
you can't pretend like there's no difference
tones
there.
And voices and different cadence.
So it's really funny when these guys start, you know, hello, Mr. Johnson, how are all your needs for household goods? And then all of a sudden the people on the other end, well, tell me more, young man. You sound like, as opposed to when he first called up, and they're like, I'm not interested, boom. And then it goes crazier than that. It gets really, really dark and weird and sci-fi and creatures. And I'll just say 3 stars. I think some people are going to love it and some people are going to walk out. But take a chance on it.
All right, so Sorry to Bother You and Ant-Man and the Wasp, big hits. Richard Roper is here. We've got another movie and then a limited TV show on HBO that we're going to get to.
Cool.
But first, we have to find out what Ryan's got at the bottom of the hour.
Well, the Indiana governor has spoken when it comes to the attorney general allegations against the attorney general of groping the state lawmaker. We'll have more on that coming up.
All right, traffic trouble spots, Violetta. Chicago's hosting the ultimate month-long food festival this August. Visit ctfoodbowl.com. to get your seat at the table. Richard Roper is in the studio. We've talked about Ant-Man and the Wasp. We talked about Sorry to Bother You. And what's next on the big list?
Let's talk a little bit about the Whitney Houston documentary that's coming out, just called Whitney. And some people might be thinking, wait a minute, wasn't there a documentary last year? There was. There was a Whitney Houston documentary. And there was a bad Lifetime movie a few years before that. But this is the definitive documentary about Whitney Houston. The family, the estate participated, so you have access, the filmmaker has access to all kinds of, you know, behind the scenes footage, tis her two brothers, her mother, a lot of close family friends, even Bobby Brown, they all participated in this documentary.
Okay.
But it's not just a washed over, you know, glossed over look at her life. It's a beautiful chronicle of Whitney Houston's life, growing up in Newark, New Jersey, and coming from, of course, this kind of singing royalty family. Her mother, Sissy Houston, her husband was Dionne Warwick, and her learning to sing in a church, and all through her meteoric rise. But it also talks a lot about the dark side. And we see, unfortunately, I mean, I think this film is really exhilarating at times, and then absolutely heartbreaking. And we had a clip here. This is a very close family friend talking about when she first kind of hooked up with Bobby Brown, and it first seemed like a good thing, and she was in love and got married, and then part of the reason why it fell apart.
That's my sister-in-law. This is Bobby. Whether you know it or not, yeah, it's me.
She was the superstar, and he had a couple of hits, so kind of equal, close enough. And then The Bodyguard hit, and she shot up into the stratosphere, and he knew instinctively he would never get there, and he just kind of shut down.
When you got people in the media talking about Mr. Houston instead of Mr. Brown, you know, instead of saying, like I say, fuck him, he let it get to him.
Can I just ask you real quick, Miss Houston?
Mrs. Brown, man.
Mrs. Houston
don't
Brown.
Yes, darling.
Ooh.
You could see the ego there. Yeah. And no one ever called her Whitney Brown, thank God.
No.
And there's a real telling moment in this documentary, too. And people might not remember this, but you know, when Whitney Houston, when she had become a superstar, Al Sharpton and others started protests against her, saying she had become too white, too mainstream. Yes. They called her Whitey Houston. And she got booed at an awards ceremony, BET, where, and she was shocked. And at that same award ceremony, Bobby Brown, at that time, was hot. And he came out and did his bad boy routine, and was the crowd loved him. And the theory, you know, kind of espoused by this movie is that's when she decided, you know what, I need to be with someone like that. A man, you know, so that people understand. Yeah, exactly. And, it just, look, they were adults, they're both responsible, but, you know, the enabling that went on both ends. I'm giving this film 3.5 stars.
Okay.
I think, first of all, you know, people need to see what happened. She was only 48 years old when she died.
Amazing.
And she had been through so many ups and downs. But it's also great, the beginning of the film, when we see when she was 18 years old, her first TV appearance on the Merv Griffin Show.
Okay.
She's 18.
Oh, my God.
And she just knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
And, you know, and at that moment, you know that you're seeing a world-class generational talent. And then all those great 80s videos they play, and her live concert appearances. The Star-Spangled Banner, of course, after the Persian Gulf War. Yep. People remember that. And that's a great story because she wanted to do something like Marvin Gaye had done with the NBA All-Star Game. So one of her arrangers, they actually put together a different arrangement. I mean, it's done in a different cadence, and sent it to her, and she didn't even bother to listen to it. She goes, I'll listen to it once before I go on. She listened to it backstage, went out there, and nailed it.
Wow. I mean,
she had that kind of talent. And then, of course,
it doesn't shy away from what led to her downfall.
Oh, and we see some horrible home movie footage, and we see her falling apart, and we see that, you know, the interviews that just went so sideways with Diane Sawyer and Oprah, where, you know, the crack is whack. And then she tried to make a comeback, and she was booed off the stage practically in Australia. So it's sometimes tough to sit through, but ultimately, it's a reminder of what a great talent she was.
Very nice. All right, and finally, we only have a couple minutes left because baseball is coming up. But HBO does some wonderful things. And I love Amy Adams, and she is in a new limited series on HBO.
You are correct, sir. Sharp Objects. And if you were a fan of Big Little Lies, the limited edition,
really,
you know, miniseries, HBO with Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman. This is the same director that did that, has directed every episode of Sharp Objects. It's eight episodes. They sent me seven. They wouldn't send me the last one, so I didn't spoil the ending, but they sent me seven. And I can say it's every bit as good. And Sharp Objects is based on a novel by Gillian Flynn, who's from Chicago, who, of course, wrote Gone Girl, which became a huge movie hit. This was her first novel. Amy Adams plays a reporter in St. Louis who goes to a small town in Missouri where she grew up, where there's a possible serial killer at large. And then once she gets knee deep into that small town life, you understand why she wanted to get out of there.
Yeah.
Because more bad stuff happens in a small town. Let's put it this way. This is the kind of small town in southern Missouri, like every year they celebrate Calhoun Day, and he's a Confederate general. And everybody still dresses up in their Confederate outfits.
There's something underneath.
And there's a big statue of General Calhoun in the town square. And she's like kind of horrified.
Oh,
and they're like, well, it's a town tradition. And the school play is all about the women who, you know, fended off the northern attackers. And slit their throats, like these 12-year-old girls. And then the Northern Army came in and tried to rape us and pillage us, but we shot them dead, you know. But it's also, it's very dark and interesting. And Amy Adams, I guarantee you, will get an Emmy nomination for this. Absolutely. Sharp Objects premieres Sunday night, HBO.
Right. I got to record that. Patricia Clarkson is in it.
Yeah,
she's
plays
fantastic.
Amy Adams' mom. And if you don't know her, you'll know her when you see her. Yeah. She's a great actress. And Chris Messina, who's been in a lot of things, plays a detective. Casting is, it's one of those movies, where, or series, I guess you say, where even if you don't know the names, you're like, I remember that guy from that movie. Oh, that guy. Oh, she's in this. Like, really cool.
And this sounds like one of those things where it's better that it's in one of these 8-part
yes,
limited
think so.
Things than trying to jam it into a 2-hour, 2.5-hour movie.
It gives it
movie.
A chance to breathe. And there's a lot of flashbacks to Amy Adams' childhood. And the young actress who plays Amy Adams as a child is the same actress who played the little girl in It, the movie It.
Okay.
And now in the sequel to It, Jessica Chastain is going to play the older version of this girl. So now this little girl has to do is play a young version of Bryce Dallas Howard, and she'll have played all the redheaded actresses as a girl.
All the redheads are getting work. It's good to see all
but,
the redheads
but, you know, she's
work.
Terrific in it, too. And it gives us a chance because they stretched it out. To really get to know a lot of the other characters who in the book might have gotten 6 pages, but here are really fully fleshed out characters. And the director who directed every episode of Big Little Lies and Sharp Objects is also a film director. He did Dallas Buyers Club. So
nice. We've
talked about this before. These TV shows are really 1-hour movies that are put on television. They're shot like films. They look like films, and they feature, you know, A-list film actors and actresses. So Sharp Objects, check it out.
So check that out. Always good to see you, Rich.
Thank you, my friend, for
coming in. All right, we've got to get out of here because it's almost time for Andy Mazur to start his pregame, which he will do after Ryan has the news. I will talk to you again tomorrow in for Ro and Anna. Thank you for listening and being part of the program. And that's it. We got to get out of here. So it is 6:30 on 720 WGN Chicago. Time for the news.